Where'd she go? Where'd Roz go? Thank you. Roz, outstanding. Wow. Let's all stand, please. Now, tonight, there's good news and there's bad news. As I was told this morning, Frenchie has to go someplace for 2 weeks. That's great. Everything tonight is a waste of his time, Ron's time, Gail's time, and Lois's time. Because tonight is an introduction that will mean nothing without the next 2 weeks after it. So I'm just being honest. Now, when I was young, I would get up and rant and rave about music. When I've gotten older, I actually try to reason with people out of the Bible. Which one works the best? Ranting and raving does. Because people don't understand how to think. So tonight won't be uncomfortable, though I will at the beginning make everybody uncomfortable. Intentionally. Because I want us to think about, we're not going to talk about public worship. We're going to talk about music. You know the kind you listen to in your car. The kind that Pastor Kwok has the privilege of listening to every morning at school. Do parents still play music when they drop their kids off? Good Christian music too, right? You're sitting there like, why are they listening to that? Well, you should be asking that question. This isn't going to be mean. I'm actually going to try to establish a biblical theology of music tonight. I know that is just stupid to even think about, but that's what I'm going to do. And in next week, we're going to look at how to analyze music in general. I'm not a musician. You don't have to be a musician to understand music. And unfortunately, everybody in this room, including the oldest in the world, Frenchie, has grown up in the era in 1954. Something was invented. Frenchie, do not speak. It's a little bit bigger than this. This is an iPhone 8. It's slightly wider and about 2.5 times as big, but it weighed less than this phone that changed the world. Did you hear me? Look at me in the eyes. It changed the world. How did it change the world? What was it? The transistor radio allowed young people to have their own music. No longer did young people listen to. Now I could listen to my own music with a little thing in my ear or putting that little 9-volt battery in, Frenchie. Frenchie probably has 12 of these in his basement someplace. Now, you don't need that. You need one of these, right? Hello, I can't hear you. By the way, just because you're old, that's your problem. You're so far behind in life, you're still stuck on TV. Kids don't watch TV. This is their world. Come to school. Now, you being mad? No. We're going to have to actually have an honest conversation about music. No lying. We're not going to learn about the backbeat of music. We're not going to learn about playing your music backwards like I heard in several sermons as a young person. You know, if you listen to the Beatles backwards, you got an occult message. And I'm thinking, well, listen to them forward. That's bad enough. Why do I got to listen to them backwards? So let's read chapter 4, verse 29. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding. The King James says exceeding. We would probably say exceedingly much. And largeness of heart, and those are the same statements. Remember, heart doesn't mean emotions. In the Bible, it means the center of your being, and in this case, your mind. Even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the East Country. The East Country would be where? Mesopotamia, Iraq, yes, you know where the civilizations began in Ur and Akkad and all of those places that are mentioned in the Bible, where civilization, Sumer. So it says it excelled that. It also excelled, what was the other great dynasty? Egypt. So he's making a pretty big claim. Then he mentions some people, we don't know who these people are. For he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite and Heman, Chalco, Darda, the sons of Mahal, and his fame was in all nations round about, and he spoke, we'll say spoke tonight, 3,000 Proverbs. Now, if you think about this, how many Proverbs are in the book of Proverbs? Not that many. And his songs were 1,005. Is that a lot of songs? If you just wrote music, do you think that's a lot of songs? Yes, there are a couple people I know that wrote more. Wesley wrote more. But Wesley was a freak of nature too. It says, and he spake of the trees, from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beast. And beast in this context always just means animals. Animals of any variety. Something that was alive, as opposed to, that had blood in it, that kind of thing. And fowl, birds, creeping things. I'll just leave it at that. And fish. And I'm going to correct that. Fishes doesn't work for me. And there came all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth which had heard of his wisdom. Now, what I want to do tonight, I would actually like to have your attention. I'm going to walk through some things. When we leave here tonight, accept the introduction. You're going to be very happy. The introduction, I'm going to put you on the spot. Because if we don't deal with this, then we haven't dealt with anything. Now, some of you are going to be very disappointed in where I go. Probably everybody will be, because some of you want to have the four rules to how to choose music, and then some of you want to do whatever you want to do. And both of those really don't find much representation in Scripture. And we'll just get started. Hopefully this will be helpful. But we know one thing, Solomon wrote a lot of songs, which I'm guessing those Jewish people did a lot of singing. All right, let's pray. Father, thank you for this night. May this be I just desire to be helpful. I want to be a little bit more relaxed tonight. I'd like to actually have a conversation, not yell and scream, not have to get in people's business. And it's hard. It's hard for us because we are so distracted. We don't have transistor radios probably since the 70s. Now we have every device under the sun and we can't turn the noise off. It's with us every place we go. Help us tonight as we look at these texts. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. Now, let's begin by two things. I want to ask a question, and then I want you to read the passage. We're not going to read it, but the notes in the notes that tell you what the passage is about. Here's the question, everybody. If you're not from America, this won't help me. So you have to be, Mike, I'm asking you, Frenchie, which probably doesn't know, but here it is. You all ready for the question? And I'm being serious. When did we start playing music every place we go? Do you understand the question? There used to be a time when you went to a Walmart-like store, there was no music. Last night, Jenny and I, Cliff and Judy, and Dada was supposed to go, but he backslid, and Mike decided he didn't want to go because he was working or something, I don't know. But anyhow, and the Marriotts, we went over to Outback. First thing is, they have TV screens all over Outback. I thought you came there with people to have a conversation and eat. And the second thing, you can't hear each other because? So, answer the question. Does anybody know? Jim?
I think it started in stores. Basically, I think in the early 60s, when they had TV apps, they also had a radio in your car.
But I mean, now you cannot go any place without noise. Do you realize the damage that does to you? There are people in this room that haven't spent 15 seconds alone in their lifetime. You have music and noise. It's white noise every place. And the problem is, here's a pastor trying to tell you to be still and know that I am God, and you're never still. Our whole culture is the antithesis of being still. Are you with me? I think it did. I don't know what year it started. That music kind of noise, but that wasn't intrusive. Somewhere in the late 70s, I remember the music that I had grown up on all of a sudden started getting played in grocery stores and other places you went. Is that, I don't, it's hard to remember, isn't it? By the way, it's hard to remember back. Tim? When we were kids, yes. So young people, please look at me. Do you realize there was a day every place you went, it was silent? And now every place you go, it's noisy. Actually, so noisy that you can't always have a conversation because you can't hear the person right across from you. Huh? Who would want to do that? All right, I'm going to give my testimony. I'm not going to joke tonight. I'm just going to give it. Music has always been a part of my life. I think it's a part of every person in this room's life, no matter what your age. If for me, I started out in church, so I started with church hymns, correct? Now, I will say in my home, my mom and dad did not play a lot of music. They weren't not a lot into music. So in my home, not much. I didn't have, Roz, what you're going to be able to do to your children in the future. You're going to be able to do, if you learn enough from this Emily girl, you can teach your daughter how to play this flute and enjoy music together for the rest of your life and leave the television and the trinkets alone. Wow. That's a beautiful thing. I also grew up, of course, with music in school. And the music in our public school, we had choirs, of course. They had music teachers. We grew up with patriotic music. At Christmas time, it's kind of weird. We sang exactly the songs in my public school that we sing in this church. Anybody my age knows this. You say, what about separate? Oh, in the 60s and 70s, they didn't care. It's somewhere in the 70s to 80s that got lost. So I grew up on that. We had songs in public to some degree, but that was not normal in the 50s and 60s unless it was more classical or Muzak a little later, I think. 1964 to 1968 or 69 was my first remembrances. I'm not going to tell you the details. I'm trying to be very specific because I don't want any person to lie when they leave this place. Tim told me I'm mean. Tim, I'll tell you why. Christians lie too much. This isn't about lying. I don't want anything to be about guilt in the next 3 weeks. I want to talk about real stuff. From 1964, this little thing called a transistor, and the fact that I had an older brother and sister, I started hearing music. So I'm going to mention some of the groups. Paul Revere and the Raiders, the Byrds, Turn, 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 the Mamas and the Papas, Jefferson Airplane. And everybody in this room that knows who Jefferson Airplane is knows that you go ask Alice when she's 10 feet tall. That's a Christian song. A little bit later, in the 67, 68 era, I was introduced to Jimi Hendrix and the Cream. If you don't know who they are, that's okay. In the early 70s, I was introduced to Led Zeppelin. My first album I ever purchased was Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven. And I bought two albums the same day, and the Who's Next. That was my first two albums. So when I speak about music, I'm not playing games. Nobody's going to lie to me. I've been down that road. I grew up with this. And part of it was that transistor radio. I could have my music, and my mom couldn't hear it. And by the way, this is the reason, if you go back in my mother's family, the older brothers and sisters, their culture is identical to my grandparents. Mom, Uncle Florin, Uncle Bug, Uncle Kook were just like their parents. It's the people my age or a little older, the ones 10 years older. Why? Transistor radio allowed them to have music that was different than their parents. And parents, if you're so dumb to think your kids aren't listening to music and things they shouldn't, and I'm not saying all music... My point isn't going to be that all music's bad. It's just they're doing it. I did that. Somewhere in 1971, 72, became Full Speed Ahead with music. It became The Struggle with music, and I could mention dozens of rock bands. That's not important. I understand classic rock from 65 to about 78. I knew it. I breathed it. I lived it. It was my existence. The greatest struggle of my early Christian life, I drank beer, and yes, I smoked pot like an idiot. But by the way, I didn't have parents like some of your parents and didn't know the difference like some of you should know. My big struggle was the music. And what goes with the music? What, Jim? The culture. I love the culture of the 60s and 70s. And all that went, you heard Dr. Marriott said he was a hippie. I know exactly, we're about the same age, and I know exactly what he's talking about. Precisely. I joined the United States Navy in 1975, June 13th. The Lord had really got a hold of my life in the first 6 months of the Navy. I had a lot to deal with. But my first great struggle, I used to actually believe this, if I could ever overcome music, all my problems would go away. Now, they didn't all go away, but I will say the thing. Getting away from, now you got to hear this carefully for you that don't think. It wasn't the music exactly, it was the music culture. And man, that culture just enveloped people. And Pastor Millard, Victory Baptist Church, Beaufort, South Carolina, preached a sermon on rock music. Here was the problem. It would be like Gail and Ron preaching a sermon on rock music. Don't know anything about rock music. Right, Gail? Pastor Millard, all he managed to do was to get me mad. And he said a lot of untrue things. And I knew the music. You say, how did you finally get out of the music? It's no secret. 1975 to 1976, I did the unthinkable. I started listening to what the songs said. It wasn't the backbeat that I learned from Ron Hamilton and Frank Garlock, whatever that stuff means. It wasn't how loud it was. I like the loudness. I like hard rock. I listened to the songs and I thought, yeah. You say, what specific one? Jethro Tull, Aqualung. You say, I don't know what that is. You don't need to know. I started listening to the words and thought, of course, I could have listened to Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze all through my veins. You see, from this girl right over here, I don't think Sam and those guys, you got a different issue in there. You're different. To fill back here to every person in America, we got a problem. We have grown up with music, and a whole bunch of it isn't good. And we go out of our way to defend listening to stuff we ought not to listen to. And again, when I get done with this, you're going to like me. I don't think all secular music is of the devil. But you do have to do more than just show up and say, well, that's just my music. Or maybe everybody in this room needs to spend one morning with Pastor Koch greeting people that bring their children to this school. And you're like, what are you listening to? Tim? Look in your notes. This is the structure of 1 Kings. I am not going to deal with the structure tonight. To me, it's kind of duh. The structure of 1 Kings 4 is Solomon was wise. We all agree to that? He was wiser than any and all others. We all agree with that. He was wiser in all ways, and he was wiser why? Because his wisdom came from God or was God-given. I'm just going to look mainly at the music side of it tonight. What I find in a church, and I want you to understand this tonight, is this. I have found after pastoring for a long time, you generally have one or two extremes. You have a small group over here, very small, on one side. And then you have the much bigger group over here. Now, if I had to choose, I'd probably go for this side. But this side over here never hears a thing that's ever said about anything. Because, I don't know. You'll have to tell me. We'll talk about that next week in your notes. On the far left of your notes, this side, looking for my direction, is simply what I call the no music. There are people that basically don't listen to music. Did you know that? Please look at me in the eyes, everyone. From 1976 until 1991 or so, I never, ever, ever listened to one single secular song. Did you hear that? I was in that camp. You know why? Because when I got out of rock music, I wanted out of that mess. And the culture, and the drugs, and the attitudes, and the drinking, and the laziness, and all that went with it. Does everybody understand that? I don't think that's a healthy place to live. But there are some people, I'm going to go right down the list on the left side, that they basically have no music, and I would say this is 5 to 10% of people. It's a small group in a church. My guess, there's people in this room that don't ever listen to music. Is that a large group? Out of this room right here, probably two or three. Now, down towards the bottom, this is my thinking about these people. Either, and I'm giving you the causes, either from no need of music, it seems like there's some people that just don't have the need to have music. Do they have that need? Let me ask you a question. Do you think Gene Losey listened to music? No. As far as I know, I never saw him around music. He would sing music. Well, he would do whatever's called singing in church. Okay, you probably didn't want to hear it, but he'd do it. Is that correct? I don't think some people have a great need for music. Do I have that need? The answer would be yes. Now, I know some people think, Pastor Warren, you're not emotional. You need to quit lying to yourself and quit reading other people through your small-minded way. Everybody has emotions. You know nothing about, by the way, only one person in this room knows anything about how I think about music. And you're not that person. There's only one right over here. She already knows. If I like a song, is it happy or sad? Say it again. Is it happy or sad? See, you didn't know that. Music never, if it's happy, I turn it off. Can't stand any happy music. You say, why? I'm twisted. All right. Some of you will figure me out. Let's go to the far other side. The other group is what I call the any and all music. They basically, whatever they grew up with is what they listen to. Any and all music. Is that true? Yes or no? Whatever it is, I listen to it. Is that a good habit to have? Well, unless popular music has changed since I was a kid. Now, I look at our young men back here. Young men, may I say one thing to Tupper, because he has a good mind, and Superman. You guys are both smart guys, and you're old enough. Your generation is different than mine in one way. In my generation, there were exactly two kinds of music. Old people music and rock and roll. Today, there's 87 different kinds. So it's hard for a pastor to get up and talk about the kind of music because the kids said, well, I don't listen to that. I remember going to my Bible class one time 10 years ago and asking them what kind of music they listened to. I had like 12 kids in the class. Every one of them listened to a different station. They didn't even listen to related genres. Do you understand that, old people? So you're going to go up and preach your sermon on rock music. Good luck on that one. The kids are laughing, rock music. Okay, we better move on. I would say this is 80% plus of people listen to any and all music, meaning they never have any discernment about music. Is that a fair statement, Tim? What's your experience been? Listening to what parents, and most of these are people that want their kids to do right. Oh, by the way, they sometimes can't figure out why their kids don't do right when they're not doing right. This is Tim McGrail's song. It's his favorite song. Crosby, Stills, Nash. I don't think it was Young at that time. One of their favorite songs, you know, if you're not with the one you love, honey. Love the one you're with, Stephen Stills. See, he knew right away. Now, listen, here's Tim singing that song. If you're not with the one you love, honey, love the one you're with. If he was listening to that kind of junk when Haley's listening, do you understand what Haley gets? Not listening to your religion, it's listening to your reality. That was one of the songs, too, that I thought, you know, I can't keep going down this path listening to that kind of music. Okay, some of you are getting nervous. Next, the problem with this kind of music is mindless. Do you understand what mindless is? It's just doing what you do. Or you could say it this way. Follow my heart. I've had people say, well, Pastor, I just like it. Yes, and I like the fifth piece of pecan pie. That doesn't mean I need it. Do you realize even in a church like ours, many people follow their heart? So it's mindless. Do you understand mindless? Have you ever caught, listen, don't raise your hand. Have you ever pushed the button on the radio? First of all, when you turn the radio on the car, every time you get in the car, the first question you ought to be thinking is this: why do I do that? Why don't I spend some time alone with God thinking? Is that okay, yes or no? You say, Pastor, I turn on Christian music. Look at me in the eyes. It is not one ounce better than secular. Because you're doing it mindlessly. Turn the things off. Have some peace. Have some quiet. Would you believe that Jenny and I drove from our house to Springfield to see my mother, and she only listened to rock music for an hour out of that trip? Listen, you don't want to ride with me. I listen to music. I do. But I want to say this. If you ride in my car, ask my children. We would drive to Southern Illinois, and we would talk for 5 hours. We're not playing dead-headed music, Christian or otherwise. And I'm not real convinced about most of the Christian music. So, next. It is always highly emotional, and if it's Christian, it's doctrine-less if Christian. So that's the kind of music people listen to. Some listen to what I call the doctrine-less Christian music. Did you all read the song that we sang? The song was based on 2 Timothy 1:12. I know whom I have believed in what? You know the song. And the doctrine of that song. Listen to the music. By the way, one of the things I'm going to recommend then is actually listen to your music. Quit being mindless. If you listen to your music after a while, most of the time you're going to realize, I'm just listening to music that has nothing to it. Because I can't be still. If I'm still, I go to sleep. If I could take right behind Debbie McGrail, that lovely lady, and your sister, and your little, beautiful little sister, and I could teach you to stop doing things or never begin doing things mindlessly, you'll go 100 miles further. The mindless consumption of nothing. All right, in your notes. Where I want you to be is in the middle. I don't have a specific, but in the middle, I would like you to become an eclectic person. Do you know what eclectic means? It means someone who can choose. Do you understand? Otherwise, when you listen to music, you actually choose to listen to music. And eclectic can mean other things too, but the word eclectic has the root of choosing, meaning I choose the music I listen to. I don't know how many people do this. My guess is it's 1%. But I think there are people who actually listen to music deliberately in your notes. And here's all I want at the end of 3 weeks is these two statements. I want your music to be carefully chosen and mindfully using your mind experienced. So if you're going to listen to a love song, listen to the love song. Don't have background music. Don't have noise in the background. Have silence. Be still and know that I am God. Drop the background. Our problem is you can't get away from the noise. People ask me, why do you like to walk at night? Quiet, no distractions. All I got to pay attention to is the drivers coming through our subdivision, and they have lights on. Oh, and I don't have anything in my ears. I can hear. So I see the lights, I hear, I just make sure I'm over. Why? It's quiet. Turn off the noise. You say, I listen to good music. Turn off the noise. Have silence. All right. Let's read again this passage. We're going to have to hurry. By the way, that was all introduction to the introduction. God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. His wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. And he was wiser than all men, verse 32. It says, and he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. Verse 34, and there came of all people to hear of the wisdom of Solomon from all the kings of the earth which had heard of his wisdom. We're just going to build up an argument. You ready? Solomon wrote songs. So the problem is, if you live in this world of no music, you actually live in a world that God doesn't necessarily approve of. Now, I want to say this to all of you. I would much prefer, but it's too late. My goodness, there's people in this room that wouldn't know a note. You couldn't tell it. You don't have to read music. You at least need to know where you're singing. If I could have everybody in this room do something, Roz, I'd have everybody learn to play a musical instrument. Maybe two or three. If you can play the piano, that means your family can do something. You know what they can do? They can sit around a piano and do what? As a family. Drop the entertainment. Drop the noise. But Solomon wrote songs. That's kind of like, duh. Number two, this is a duh also. Solomon wrote lots of songs. How many? How many did he write? 1,005. I think Brian over here has written a song or two for Bowder, haven't you? Is that an easy thing to do? You don't even write the music. You just have to write words. Have you ever got an A on one of them? Not yet. So you and him writing, this isn't happening. Dada, did you ever get an A or were yours all? Don't, come on, tell the truth. You didn't get A on your songs? Uh-oh, Bowder. Number three. Solomon wrote a great variety of songs. Certainly with a great variety of subjects, meaning see, here's one of our weaknesses. We'll get to the next point. We classify music in certain ways. Classifications are handy, but our problem is this. Solomon, from God-given wisdom, wrote songs about all kinds of things. In your notes. So he certainly with a great variety of subjects. We know for sure that he had lots of different subjects because it tells us some of them. It's highly probable with a great variety of styles, though we don't know that for sure. Frenchie has never done anything good for me, I know, in the 24 years I've been here, but Lois has. And Jenny and I and Lois and Frenchie, Rhonda, did you go to? Best concert I ever went to in my whole existence was an accident. Is that right, Lois? Do you remember which one it was? Itzhak Perlman, and we thought we were going to hear Itzhak Perlman. Well, we did, and it was Jewish music. A lot of Sephardic music from Romania. Oh, my goodness, my goodness. I've never experienced anything any better than that. By the way, my guess is some of that music has roots way back. I'm assuming unless you've been sleeping under many depths of rocks, every great violinist in history has been of what nationality? Irish? You don't even know. Jewish. I mean, every single one. It's crazy. I say in your notes, trees, cedar trees, hyssop. You say, what's hyssop? I don't know. Animals, birds. I don't know why you'd write songs about creepy things, reptiles. I think I'd keep the creepy things out of my songwriting, but he did. He wrote about fish, and he even had the audacity to write about human love. Is it wrong to talk about human love? Pastor Warren, we don't talk about that in our culture. The problem is the Bible does. All right, we'll move on. Number four, Solomon wrote both spiritual and secular songs. And I don't like that categorization. For all of you musicians in this room, the great weakness is that category. Why? Spiritual's good, secular's bad. But here's the thing. From a God-given perspective, what part of this world is not God's? So actually, Solomon wrote about God, man, and God and man's relationship to God's world. It's okay to think spiritual and secular because he did write some that I'm assuming were more sung maybe at least one of them. If he wrote it, it was sung when the people of God came to Jerusalem in procession. You know, the songs of it, it labels them differently. The King James says degrees, meaning they were marching upward to Jerusalem, or ascent. They were ascending up. It's the same word. I don't like the division because I think all the world is God's world. But in your notes, this little statement here, this took me about 4 hours to write, just for the three lines. I say this is only a partially helpful distinction. In your notes, categories, labels, nomenclature, titles, names are like bags. They help us carry things. Everybody look at me. For you that are smart in the, yeah, Rhonda's laughing. She is the bag woman. Sorry, Rhonda. Let me ask you all a question. If I said classical music, do you know what that means? Then if I asked you, what's the difference between classical and Baroque? Duncan's going to get in trouble. What if I asked you the difference between classical, Baroque, and Romantic? Some of you think, all of those are what? No, they're not, Jim. Nobody going through that period of time had any idea they were going through the classic period. Looking back, we put labels on things, so they help us what? Like a bag. I can hold things. The problem with the bag is sometimes the bag, you start thinking the bag is true and not what it's holding. This is philosophical. I shouldn't be talking about this on a Sunday night, but I'm going to give it to you. So, categories in every field, by the way, labels, nomenclature, are like bags. They help us hold things. However, they are not the things themselves. So if we talk about secular music, be very, very, very careful about that. Because I think God, the world is the Lord in the fullness thereof. So if you say, well, the world down here, that's the devil's, and God's stuff is in heaven. Maybe I should say church music and not church music. I don't know. In your notes, we don't know exactly what Solomon wrote in the line of songs that are in the Bible. Psalm 72, the King James on the left says this, and you don't have to read the Hebrew, I can. It says a psalm, the King James translates it, for Solomon. What does that mean? Did he write it? If you look over on the other side, that's the ESV, and it simply says what? The reason is the preposition, the lamed preposition, the L, which is a preposition word with the two little dots underneath, means on the right side, to, for, by, in reference to, about, towards, or in regard to. So were these songs for Solomon? By Solomon? To Solomon? About Solomon? And the answer to the question? I don't know. The lamed preposition doesn't give you enough information. But if so, Solomon wrote two what we would call spiritual songs in the sense that they would be sung either in the synagogue. By the way, no matter how we view this, they would be sung in the synagogue or they would be sung on what? Look here, folks. Pilgrimages. Remember? The ascending up to Jerusalem for the feast. Remember Psalm 118 to 124, I think, or 26? I don't remember. Right in that area. Okay? The ESV really leaves it nebulous. It says of. And of tells you no information at all. Of. Okay. Number 5. Solomon wrote both canonical, meaning in the Bible, and non-canonical, meaning not in the Bible. Next page. And mostly I say what? Most of his songs would have been not in the Bible. Correct. Number 6. Solomon wrote the greatest song ever written. How do we know this? Well, you can read it in the King James, and I'll read the little thing on the side. Shir Hashirim Asher Le Solomon. That is the song of songs. And that is a Hebrew expression for what? The greatest of all songs. So Solomon wrote the greatest song ever written. Number 7. Solomon wrote the or his greatest song about, take a breath. It's about Jesus. It's about human love. See, how do you know it's about human love? Have you read it recently? My goodness, please don't ever think this is, it's almost gross to make this about Jesus. So let's read some of it. We'll be done here in a little bit. You know, all I'm going to do, folks, is defend one thing. Look me in the eyes. The entire sermon tonight is defending one thing. So-called secular music is not of the devil. God commends it. So it doesn't help you to do this. This is good music. This is church music. This is bad music. Because everybody that does that still sings secular music. You sing the national anthem. You sing God Bless America. Yes or no?
Yes, sir.
I don't find those in the scripture. You see what I see? We got a problem. All I'm going to do tonight is establish one thing. By God-given wisdom, Solomon wrote music, and some of it was about human love. So if you sing a love song, you hear a love song, and it's a good love song. It's not about cheating with your 13th spouse. Hello? I'm talking about, is there something wrong with that? Well, we'll discuss it more, but I think the answer is not inevitably something wrong. Let's read some of this. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Then you have part of the human experience of human love. The young lady says, I am black but comely or pretty. O ye daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar and as the curtains of Solomon, look not upon me because I am black, and he's talking very specifically, because the sun hath looked upon me. Now, if you're African-American or white, this doesn't mean a thing to you. Every Filipino in this room immediately knows what this means. The worst thing that a young Filipina in the Philippines can happen to them is they become dark. I remember Aloha came back, was it last summer or the summer before? And she was, I'm using technical speak, Kayamangi. She was brown. And every white person thinks, that's pretty. And every Filipino, her mother said, By the way, was the young lady beautiful or not? She was. But what happens? Beauty becomes an inside thing. That's the reason human love is so what? Difficult. Because she's playing a game. Where at? In her own head. Oh, you thought that human love was all about, nonsense. That's the reason I hate happy music. It doesn't deal with life. This is real life. Ladies, your husband can think you're the greatest thing on earth. But in your small mind, you can think I'm ugly. Who wins? Who wins? You got to quit playing those games. All right, they're not a very fun game. I don't know what all these things mean, by the way. Song of Solomon 1, verse 7. Tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth. Boy, this is beautiful. Where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? Verse 13, a bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night betwixt my breast. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. I missed that. I'm sorry. Verse 14. By the way, you notice that they said myrrh. They didn't say garlic. Anyhow, verse 14. And my beloved is unto me as a cluster of camphor in the vineyards of Engedi. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. I don't know what dove's eyes are. I do know one thing. Some women in the Middle East really have eyes that startle you. And I have the eyes that you can't see. I saw a picture of me. I had to take a video for the Philippines, and I took the picture, and I looked at it, and I'm like, I can't even see my own eyes. How do I see out of that slit? I don't know. That's the Chinese blood, for all of you that want to know. So they would write a song about me, he that hath no eyes. This is funny. Verse 16, behold, thou art fair, my beloved, yea, pleasant. Also is our bed green. Chapter 2, verse 1, do you recognize what this is? This is a poem of high beauty about human love, using images, Hey, look up here. Smells, sights. There's images that I wouldn't use of my wife. I wouldn't say that her hair looks like a bunch of goats. There's things that I wouldn't do. Chapter 2, verse 1. I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. As the lily among thorns. Isn't it interesting when you fall in love? Well, except on TV. In The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. Isn't there something that happens that all of a sudden the one you're in love with, as ugly as men are, women think we're special? Wow. As a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me, in verse 4, into his banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Stay with me, Phlegons. Comfort me with apples, for I am, and this is terrible English, I am lovesick. His left hand is under my head. What would it be doing there? And his right hand doth embrace me. Verse 4, O dove, O my dove, thou art in the clefts of the rocks, in the secret place of the stairs. Let me see thy countenance. Let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely or beautiful. One of the great verses in the whole book, take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines. For our vines have tender grapes. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feedeth among the lilies. One of the verses that is one of the most precious verses, and I will not explain it. Until the daybreak and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be thou like a roe or a young hart upon the mountains of Bether, of division. Song of Solomon 5, we don't have time to read, but let's go down to verse chapter 6, verse 8. Are you ready? Now here's, let's do this first. Do you notice right into the verses I say about this? Human love. Got all that? Let me give you these things quickly. This song is about human love with all of its beauty. How about this word? Just read right to the right. Complexity. Is human love difficult? Yes or no? Ezra and Emily, you're still in love. Sooner or later, Ezra, you've been fooling her so far. She's going to wake up one day and say, oh my goodness. No, probably not. But I will say this. Human love is difficult. It's complex. There's always complexity. Did you all know that? What's the complexity of the Song of Solomon? Have you actually read it? Solomon already had a lot of wives. How would you like to be this beautiful girl in love with Solomon, and he looks at you and says, you're my true love. And she's thinking, what about the other 60? Well, it becomes a lot more later. I'm asking you a question. You say that shouldn't happen. How many women, don't raise your hand, ladies. How many ladies in this room think, my husband loves his mother more than me? Don't raise your hand. Why do we struggle with this? Or sometimes wives love the children more than they do the old man. Human love is not a joke. It's very complex. Let's continue reading that. There are 60 queens. 60 means what? 60. And 40 concubines. Kabit. What is that? Side cheek, Linda. Our small house, we learned from Anesu in Zimbabwe. A small house. You had the big house where the wife lives and the small house is where the concubine lives. He had virgins without number. And she comes along. You don't think love is difficult? Oh, my goodness. You say, should this be happening to us? No, it shouldn't, but life is complex. Let's go back up to down to these statements. Human love with all of its beauty, complexity, difficulty. If I can use this word, fantasy, and I will say one of the problems that happens with marriage is we start losing an element of fantasy because we see so much reality. And then, of course, if you're fantasizing on the nonsense and the filth on television, but actually having a good use of imagination is kind of a nice thing. I guarantee you, when you're dating or you're, you know, now with Sam back here, poor Oxa, when they married, she woke up with a, not fantasy, but a nightmare. It's like, oh my. That's not true, Sam. She woke up with true love, right? Oxa? I didn't hear her. In America, fantasy is not a bad thing if it's using the imagination. How about this? There's an element of mystery, and I don't have time to read it. There's a big element of fragility. Let me ask you, is love fragile? So, I'm going to ask a question. Army, Navy, Rolando's perfect, correct? Has he ever said anything to you in your married time that made you angry? Never. In the last 5 minutes. I'm not being funny with you. Here's our problem. Please look at me. Many love songs are too positive. They're not talking about love. They're talking about only fantasy. A real great love song, no different if there's a movie that's actually about love, deals with the complexity and the difficulties and all of it, because it's all true. Is that right? There is no such thing as a perfect, we got married, here we are at 50 years. When somebody says they have never fought, you're lying or you're living separately or something. Please. In your notes, many cannot accept this, meaning that Solomon wrote about human love. This can't be about human love, but it must be about God or Jesus. And I say there is some truth to that, because I think that even within relationships, look at me, between husband and wife, but even within friendships, our love of another human, whether it's just a good friendship or a marriage, is a reflection of something more profound, God's love for us. That part I agree with, but this song is not about Jesus. Lastly, we conclude. The songs, 1,005 songs Solomon wrote, received divine approval. Received divine approval. And came from divine wisdom. The entire purpose of the text we read is to demonstrate that Solomon is wiser than everybody. And it was demonstrated through his proverbs and through his songs, which means God is approving of writing songs that are more than Christian theology, but not less, in the sense of, as a Christian, our music ought to be compatible with Christianity. We'll talk about that next week. We'll finish with these statements. Human creativity, and I always appreciate it. In this room, we actually have quite a few creative people. I'm not one of them. I am creative intellectually, but I have no creativity in any other area. When I get around Sparky, I'm just dumbfounded. I got to go down to Robert's mother's house. Robert, your mother is a decorator. Did you know that? Robert, I walk into that house and things are just all perfectly angled, and it's like, oh my goodness, you come into my room upstairs where I read and there's 3 feet of books every place you look. You can't find anything. It's looked like a bomb went off. Creativity, human creativity, according to this text and others, is from God. So young people, if you could write real music, real music as opposed to stupidity, that could be something that's a God-given. Doesn't have to be inspired, but it could be from God's creativity. Great music has a not biblically inspiration, but inspiring quality that encourages you. Wow, if I hear certain songs, they do certain things to me. All we have to do is do Finlandia tonight. Can anybody raise their hand outside my wife? What's Finlandia in our songbook? You didn't raise your hand. Yes. Be still my soul. The music and the words are perfectly matched, and they do something for us. Maybe we'll conclude with that song. Next in your notes, human creativity is not only from God, it's like God. In this sense, we are participating in creating something like God does. Young men, Superman and your buddies back there and all your buddies at school, I want you to know something. When this Tim Durham guy here teaches you guys how to do woodworking, do you realize he is a highly creative man in those areas? That is a God-given thing that's so much better than the guy that comes home and sleeps in front of a television. And may I say this, and you can learn to be creative your whole life. I'd spend as much time as I could with a guy like that. It's a beautiful, amen? Stay away from the sleepers. Hang out with people that are interesting, because it'll make you interesting. Human creativity is from God, a gift of God. It's like God participating in creating something like God does. It is by or through God, meaning his ability. And if it's done properly, it is for God. My life's verse is the next verse, which is well stated in English. For of him, everything has its source in God. And through him, everything has its agency through God. And to him, everything has its end in God. Or all things, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen. Let's stand, please.